It's Thursday, 26th of May, and welcome to episode 86 of Digital Outbox. Hello again, thanks for tuning in, or downloading, tuning in, what a load of rubbish. Joining me today is Henry. Hi, Henry.
Hi, Ian. Yeah, nice to see you're still really old school there with the tuning in.
Spinning my discs.
Spinning your discs.
I'll be smashy, you can be nicey.
Oh, dear.
If this is the level of banter tonight,
we're in real trouble. You'll be playing our tune next, you know.
Always.
Oh dear. And of course everyone under 30, we've just lost them completely now from the podcast, but never mind.
But that's you assuming anybody under 30 actually, stupidly. So it's been a while since you've been on. It's good to have you back.
Yep. Well, lots of stuff going on in my life, so it's good to be back and have more evenings free where I can just drop in and join you for the podcast.
Since you were last on, not only have you turned 40, congratulations, but thanks, you're now rocking an iPad.
I am rocking an iPad, a nice 32 gig Wi-Fi model.
White, black?
White? No, black.
Enjoying it?
Very much so. Actually really quite surprised how much I'm really enjoying it. So, not so much surprise, but you know, it just the laptop doesn't get nearly so much use by me. Of course, everyone else in the family is delighted at the fact that they get onto the laptop a bit more often these days. So they're all good for everybody.
Excellent. And we really should have had some iPad picks, but we've none. Total fail. We have lots to cover because it's been 2 weeks. Two tumultuous weeks, even, since our last podcast. Let's crack on, as Christopher would say. Footballer sues Twitter. Now, when I put that title in, I was going to kind of like, you know, let's lead the listeners along this story. Let's tell them it was gigs. Because we're in Scotland, ram it. Sue me. I don't care. But it's all kind of done and dusted now.
Yeah. In fact, it's a non-story. We should move on.
Well, I actually think the Giggs bit is a non-story.
That's true.
So, Brian Giggs, having an affair with Imogen Thomas, gone through court, super injunctions and all that good stuff. But it was common knowledge on Twitter. If you had done a search for her name, you got Giggs' name every time. So it was easy to find. You know, everybody did kind of know. It was no big surprise. The annoyance, or I think the surprise really, is that the footballer, Mr. Giggs, then decided, I'll sue Twitter and we'll force Twitter to reveal who actually revealed my name. I don't know how you feel. See if he had just done nothing. I think this would have been, you know, an overnight blip and then that would be it. And instead, it's made worldwide news, which is just unbelievable. Finally, what kind of pushed it? Sunday Herald published a picture of him because the law doesn't stand in Scotland. And secondly, there was the crazy MP who revealed his name in the House of Commons. And when that happened, then everybody was free to talk about it. Super injunctions don't work in this digital age.
No, they don't. But, you know, neither do they work in the age when MPs can stand up and say something in Parliament. And he kind of really, I do understand that the judge's point of view when they're saying, well, you know, what's the point of having judgments like this if MPs can stand up in Parliament if they just disagree with anything that's said? And then, you know, and where does that actually leave the rule of law? But I mean, these super injunctions, to me, I don't know how many of them get published. I mean, get done at all, because it seems to be completely ridiculous. I mean, all these ones based on privacy, most of them do seem to be you know, just a bit over the top. Now the Trafigura one,
yes,
where the big multinational was dumping toxic waste off the coast of Africa. Well, you know, I can understand then an MP actually standing up and saying, look, this really is in the public interest.
And I would want an MP.
And I would want someone to do that. And,
exactly.
But having said that, you know, the lawyer, the judge in that case clearly got it wrong. But where is the, you know, where is the appeals process or anything like that? So, but as you say, really, in a digital age, you know, the way around this is just to use Twitter or Facebook or Google, really.
And the interesting thing was people were, I think what really got people twittering about it on last Friday and Saturday was not only the judge saying, you know, people on Twitter are out of control and they need to be, you know, reined in. It was a fact then it was, well, the first journalist to do it was potentially threatened with jail. So nothing to do with, you know, the first person to tweet it. He was the first journalist, and they thought that was somehow different to everybody else in the country, you know, putting up a tweet. So people were just, you know, talking about gigs, tweeting about gigs, and whatever her name is, Imogen. That, I mean, they reckon there was 30, 40, maybe even 50,000 different people on Friday had tweeted about it. What you can't jail all these people.
You can't jail them all. Impractical. No, you can't. You know,
and it's so I don't know. There's talk today that that Twitter might need to implement some sort of time delay between you exactly. You know, and it's people will just you know, they'll navigate to another service. You know, if Twitter was forced to bring in something around a filter, a delay, or something to vet that content, people would find ways around it anyway. You know, slightly change the name, but you'd still know who it is.
Yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so what? No, is he? I can't remember his shirt name. If it's number 11, you know. So if somebody put up Man United, you know, red 11 or whatever, everybody would know it was him. If that's his shirt number, there'd be loads of ways around it.
Of course, they would. But it's interesting, of course, because you know, we've seen people get into trouble over tweets and things in the past. You know,
people have been sacked, and people have threatened to blow up Robin Hood Airport.
Yeah, well, absolutely, and got into serious trouble over that. You know,
absolutely.
So, interesting to see how this kind of develops. But clearly, the law is well behind technology, and it's clear that our lawmakers really don't know what to do.
And I don't think they understand the technology either.
No, they don't. That is the thing.
And if you look at some of the kind of piracy cases, you know, and understanding torrents and sharing data, that understanding isn't there.
No. And, well, of course, the thing is as well with all that, I mean, this is getting a bit off topic completely, but, you know, the BSA keep talking about all these, you know, millions of pounds of lost revenue in license fees. And that's the kind of thing that people believe, whereas it's like, well, you know, the people that... use pirated software, would they have actually paid the thousands of pounds for the license in the first place? And the answer is that they almost certainly wouldn't. You know, I mean, the only reason they're using them is because they're getting it for nothing. You know, so
exactly.
But there we go.
Moving on, a couple of Apple stories. Oh, in fact, there's three or four Apple stories. What fanboys we are! A patent troll. Called Lodsys, started targeting iOS developers. And this was on May 13th. A number of small Apple developers, iOS developers in particular, in fact, it was all iOS developers, received a FedEx letter, basically saying they were breaking a patent relating to in-app purchases. And we're going to sue them, which was nice.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it was... totally about suing. Really, what it was, I think it was a bungled kind of thing. Because really, what they were really saying was, we're not suing you, but really, you're using our patent. So, will you please give us, loads of your cash?
Yes.
that you're earning from apps using in-app purchasing.
Yeah. And so basically, you need to license our patent.
Yeah.
And I think they talked about oh, I can't remember, it was like 0.4%, you know, something. They said for every £1 million we get £4,000 or something.
Yes, it was a ridiculously small sum of money. But the real story here that got me was that it took Apple 10 days to respond. In the meantime, you know, the likes of James Thompson in Glasgow and other, you know, small independent iOS developers are like, you know, they don't have the resources to defend themselves against this kind of thing. You know, their only options are either to, you know, really hope that Apple do the right thing, or they've got to remove those particular functions from their app and release a new app, because they just can't afford to defend themselves against such an obvious patent troll as that. And of course, Apple have licensed this particular patent, yes, from Lodsys.
Yes.
You know, seems a bit, you know, doubly dodgy to then, you know, go after the little guy when Apple's already licensed the particular patent. And then what happened on May 23rd, Ian?
Finally, Apple responded to developers and Lodsys, basically saying, we've licensed your patent. Our app developers aren't in violation. And I've written in, do one, you trolls. was basically the... But I think they had to do something. I mean, a lot of the feedback from developers was around, we were going to use in-app purchasing, but we're going to stand down because there's no way we could get the funds or the wherewithal to go and fight this.
You just can't fight it.
Nope.
Again, as we've said many times on the podcast, that how broken the patent system is.
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, they're supposed to, you know, stimulate innovation, protect the little guy, and every time something like this happens, you just think this system is just broken. And really, the sooner we get rid of software patents, the better.
Yes, and at the moment, we've not heard anything more from Lodsys, because straight after they'd put all their initial batch of letters out, they created a blog with loads of, why are we doing this? It's not, you know, and we're protecting our intellectual property and all that.
Yeah, not after yada, yada, yada.
All that kind of try to put a nice PR spin on. Since May 23rd, there's been silence, which was kind of... But it's not to say the threat's not there. You know, and I still think there'll be other similar ones in the future. It's just such a goldmine, you know, and it's you're chasing after a lot of people who, although it's a business, it's a one-man business, you know, and one or two software applications are their livelihood, and they can't afford, you know, to either fight it or even pay the, you know, whatever the money is, because a lot of that is just a small bit, a large bit of the profit.
Oh, absolutely. And when you allow them to patent, though, obvious things like, you know, in-app purchasing, it's like,
yes,
you know, come on.
But it's been done for years, you know, like, you know, click to buy, one click to buy, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, business methods, patents, you know, you just think.
Yeah. So a story that, again, it took Apple a while to respond on is this Apple malware. So there's been a number of different, you know, small number of malware issues with Apple Macs over the last 3-4 years. None of it really got any... You know, none of it has really got any traction, you know, being very small. I think there was one I can remember, I think it was to do with a video codec. And because it was related to a porn site, it got people like, oh, I need this codec. And with all malware, and the same with Windows, you know, put in your admin password to install. And, you know, do you know what you're installing, really? You know, so there was a fake security program called Mac Defender. And there's actually quite a funny backstory to this, because the guy that started posting about it is a guy called Ed Bott, in his Microsoft Watch column in ZDNet. And what brought it to my attention wasn't his column, but it was John Gruber actually putting out a story called Wolf, because Ed Bott has actually done the same story for the last 5 years, three times. Each time saying, you know, there is a problem, there must be a problem. But I think this time that there was a problem that needed address. Mac Defender, it did get downloaded a lot of times. A lot of people did install it. It seems to have got traction, because they have, you know, I'm not saying they've gamed Google, but they've managed to get a high ranking for that particular program. And I think that's given confidence to people that, oh, this looks like a genuine piece of software. They've now, hundreds of people, and again, I'm quoting the EdBot article, hundreds of people went to the Apple forums. And you could see it in the forums when I went and checked myself. There was lots of people talking about it, and amongst thousands of other things getting talked about. You know, so on a scale thing, it wasn't like that was dominating the forums, but it was mentioned a lot of times. And Apple weren't really offering any help. There also seemed to this story that Apple had actually said not to help, and if people actually phoned in or whatever, Apple weren't to help. I never saw that confirmed anywhere. For whatever reason, again, it picked up traction. A lot of the Apple, I guess, fanboys, not fanboys, but supporters, didn't think it was a particularly big issue. I think, again, this was about 5 or 6 days later. Eventually, Apple issued a support document on how to remove it. They're also going to initiate an update for OS X. I was going to say OS X, but I can see the bristles on you already.
Good man.
I know. One year I'll get it. One day I'll get it. So they're going to release an update which will delete all instances of the malware and warn against future downloads. But in the same day, a new version came out, because the version of Mac Defender that already existed, you had to put in your admin password to install it. So, you know, the usual bit of common sense around, yeah, if you know what you're downloading, then that's fine. But if you don't, then, you know, don't do it. But a new version's come out that doesn't need the admin password, and it's also got a different name. And I don't know is this the start of the tit for tat that affected Windows way back at the start? It's hard to say. But an interesting statistic, this is just one piece of malware. Sophos and other security firms mentioned that about 100,000 novel malicious programs for Windows are detected every day.
It's phenomenal, isn't it?
Which, and I know they'll want to put that kind of figure out to give you this kind of scary picture, but I can't question it. All I can say is I know one bit of malware called Mac Defender, and there's security firms claiming there's 100,000 a day that are new and different on Windows platform, which is phenomenal.
Yeah,
absolutely phenomenal.
Can I just say, though, I mean, one of the things about this particular Mac Defender was that, you know, the way to stop, an easy way to stop it is to switch off the open safe attachments automatically after downloading in Safari, if that's the browser that you're using. And to me, it was always rather dodgy that was on by default anyway.
Yes.
That, you know, if you, I mean, I understand from a usability point of view, but really from a security point of view, basically, if you downloaded anything from the internet, OS X would automatically open it for you unless you'd switched off that option. Yeah. So, I mean, that was just, to me, that's just a little bit reckless on Apple's part to have that as a default option anyway. And, you know, people should have really switched that off. But then how many people do? How many people just go with the defaults that Apple set up? And to be honest, why should they really have to? You know, Apple should supply them with something which I think they should go the other way and make things, you know, a bit more secure that you can, at your own risk, go and make easier to use. But there we go. That's always going to be the trade-off, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Another point, and it might be different for you because you've got a family, multiple logins. I have one login. I am the administrator. What I should really be doing is have that administrator account separate to my normal day-to-day account. Common sense, but I don't do it. So...
No, the usual account, yes, I should have a lower security account as well. But it just gets such a faff anytime you want to put anything in. You got to, you know, authenticate all the time. I'm just like, oh, dear.
I know. Just like Vista.
Yeah. Or Windows 7. But at least with Windows 7, it just keeps popping up the windows until you just go, oh, yeah, whatever. Not actually a security feature at all. You're just like, yeah, yada, 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 whatever.
Our final Apple one just now, that factory explosion, I think, will cause some iPad shortages. So there was a factory explosion in China.
Yeah, and people died, sadly, actually.
Yes, so serious issue. And of course, our main point is there'll be no more iPads, or no more iPads, but there'll be less iPads. So.
But we're all right, we've got ours.
Well, you've got your new one.
I've got my new one.
Yeah. I might have to cut that story because
that's just terrible, isn't it?
Well, plumbed the moral like debts.
I really have.
Exactly. Really have.
Oh dear. Yeah. Moral low ground. Oh dear. Yeah.
But that's a really good segue onto a couple of Facebook stories. So the first one we'll do quickly. Facebook apps leak user information.
Really? Who would have thought? Really?
Symantec, yeah, another one of these blooming security companies that just love to put fear and loathing into your life. So they've been working with Facebook, and what they published was that Facebook apps have inadvertently been leaking user data to third-party developers. Right. Facebook were slightly less cavalier with that approach and said, well, it's not quite as bad as that, and we've been fixing that, so don't worry about it. But Symantec were saying many applications, mostly advertisers, have accidentally had access to Facebook user information like profiles, photographs, and chat. And the upshot is that Facebook is going to push on with making things more secure. So they're going to enforce certainly SSL certification by October 1st. So if you're a third-party developer, that's going to have a big impact. And also start to require OAuth 2.0. So part of me thinks, same as you, that there've been the information that's been obvious, it's been leaking out, and I think everybody, it's a kind of almost an open secret that's the way it's been.
Yeah.
And if you join Facebook, then you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's you know, just basic internet safety or security or whatever. You know, don't put anything on Facebook that you wouldn't have, you don't want splashed across the front page of the headlines or to hear on see on Sky News tomorrow. So,
what have you been doing? What have you been doing? You're going to be in Sky News tomorrow.
Absolutely nothing.
I just can't.
Certainly nothing that's on my Facebook profile anyway.
Just remember, see when you get interviewed, just say Digital Outbox. That's all you have to say. You don't have to say what it's about. People will find us.
Here's hoping. I've seen the traffic statistics.
Have you? You're no danger of getting knocked down, put it that way. The far worse story. This was horrid. Facebook were exposed. There was a story going around that there was a major tech firm trying to smear Google, and they'd hired a PR firm called Burson Marsteller to basically lie and talk about how Google were bad, Google were evil, they're really the ones you need to worry about with security, etc. And then it came out that Facebook had actually were paying this PR firm to do this, to plant these anti-Google stories related to user privacy.
Related to privacy. Facebook smearing Google about user privacy. I mean, you couldn't get more ironic at all if you tried, could you?
The best bit. It was down to US-based news website The Daily Beast to uncover the client was Facebook. A Facebook spokesman later told The Daily Beast that it resented Google's attempts to use Facebook data in its own social networking service. So this is all about, you know, Facebook are trying to get as much data shared out there as possible because it gets loads of traffic. They're going to have an IPO next year. You can buy shares. They want that kind of social graph, all that good stuff. But by sharing it, Google can mine it as well, and they can take advantage of it. Sucks. But there you go. Do you think... I was listening to another podcast, and they were saying that Facebook's not alone. A lot of the big tech firms, almost all of them, will be doing this, you know, hiring other firms and spinning stories. Do you think?
I think... I think a lot of them try and do that, you know. I'm sure they do. Mm. Seems a bit of a waste of money to me, but, you know.
And just out of interest, if you go and look at the... I've forgotten her name, but I'm on a page talking about them. So what was her name? Burson Marstella. See if you look at their previous clients. What a list. Nigeria. So after a particular war and reports of genocide, so they did some PR for Nigeria. Indonesia after the invasion of East Timor. The 200,000 people that were murdered. Let's try and cover that up. Thanks very much. Argentina. So I'll hold a cover up for them. Saudi Arabia. I mean, the list goes on.
Genghis Khan.
They've been
Hitler.
They've been bought by many companies to try and argue against climate change. That doesn't exist. You know, this is all normal. And yeah, the big tobacco firms are also heavy users of this PR firm. So it's a basically, if you want to do some dirty business, they are the men for you.
Or if you want to cover it up, yeah.
Yeah, oh, Three Mile Island gets a mention. A hold of oil spills. I mean, it's... it's all good. So, yeah, well done, Facebook. I think they really are the slimiest company in tech. They really are.
Who, Facebook or Burson Marstella?
Oh, Facebook. There's just something scummy about them. Have you watched the social network?
You're just believing all Aaron Sorkin's press from the.
Of course I do. I watched the West Wing. Network. It would have been the best American prison ever. Come on.
I mean, that was off topic, but there was a thing, wasn't there, about getting Martin Sheen to be to run for the Democratic?
Do it. <It's> like, no, hold on. You're laughing. If Reagan can get in,
well, there we go.
If Reagan can get in, then Martin Sheen could have. Although I just want to say winning at that point.
You're winning it, you do, don't you? Yeah. It's his family that might give him some problems. Really, Martin Sheen. Anyway. Let's crack on.
Oh, do we? Right.
I just had to say that because Chris isn't here. You know that.
Bless him. He's having a horrible day today. Loads of mobile stories. That's our tune. Not our tune. See, when you said our tune earlier on, I felt like pointing out to people it wasn't like me and you have a tune that you play to each other. I know, it's that for that, just in case there was an age group that didn't know what that was. You know, it's like Henry pulls out Ian's tune. Ian, this is for you. Anyway. Stop it.
Stop
mobile,
it.
Mobile stories. Loads of them. Windows Phone 7.1. Mango.
who comes up with these names? I think most of these names, there must be guys wandering around the supermarket thinking, oh, I've got to come up with a product name, You know, I'm waiting for something, gingerbread. You know, I'm waiting for them to come up with something like marmalade or something.
Well, you see, that sounds fine compared Windows to ice cream. Ice cream sandwich, you know. So Mango is the next update for Windows Phone. 500 new features. A whole load of blur. Basically, it brings them up to date with where Android and iOS is right now. So they're bringing in multitasking. They're bringing in a kind of common one area where you can see your SMS, Facebook, IM chats merged into one thread from somebody, which I think's a good idea. You know, if I can see all your conversations rather than hitting all the different apps. I think we've seen that on, was it not Palm? I think they did that with that single stream. And that sounds like a nice feature. They're also going to build in Facebook and Twitter, which again is nice. And the browser's based around IE9. And they showed a nice demo, which speed-wise, it seemed to blow everything else away. But they didn't reveal what hardware it was running on, so it's always a bit of a moot test. But
yeah, they've got a Cray supercomputer in the next room, you know.
The search looked really nice as well. They were doing some searching, and the results it was pulling back, very contextual to where you were. You know, so, you know, here's the restaurants, and here's how many seats are available, and here's what, you know, so it gave you a lot more information rather than just saying, there's the place you can go and eat. It'll be a free update this autumn, and it was also, they were kind of a bit hazy whether they would actually, you know, whether Nokia would bring out Windows phone this year. Which seems strange that other manufacturers can, but the one they're heavily tied with can't. And actually, I don't know. There's still a big question mark against me. They've never revealed sales numbers, which to me means it must suck.
They really don't have the traction, really, do they, at all, compared with Android? No. You know, and this looks like, I mean, on the face of it, this sounds like it's quite a decent platform, but it's certainly not enough to win me over.
No, I mean, if I didn't buy an Apple phone, I would Android's a no brainer choice.
Absolutely,
instant buy. You know, it was just no thought needed. In fact, the only thought would be just what hardware.
Yeah, of course.
But that'll be interesting. They are playing a different. They are playing forward in a different way to the other ones. I mean, I think Android and iOS have got a lot of similarities. They have tried to do something different. I think they've recognised they had to do something different.
They do have to differentiate themselves, don't they?
Yep.
They have to differentiate themselves, and they've been playing catch up. So, I mean, this looks like. Which is always good for competition, you know. If there's a bit more, if they're a bit closer to Android and an iOS, so.
I still only know one person that's bought a Windows phone.
Yep, I don't know anyone. I don't know anyone.
Says it all. LTE UK trial, BT and the horribly named Everything Everywhere.
Yeah, that was one that wasn't made up in the supermarket, was it? That was like, oh, I can't think of anything. What we call it? Oh, we call it Everything Everywhere.
It's just like an apprentice name. It's like somebody an apprentice would do it because they've only got a day. Everything Everywhere. They're going to stage an LTE trial. So this is basically 4G in Cornwall, starting on the 1st of September through to the end of the year. Connection speeds, although going as high as 40 meg, are probably more likely to be 10. But still, for a mobile platform, that is very, very good compared to what we get now. And they're looking for volunteers. And this is part of the run-up to the sell-off next year of the spectrum. I still think they're talking about potentially it's the end of next year before it starts to see any rollout, and probably more 2013. So a good way away.
Yeah, and you know, as we've seen actually with 3G networks, I mean, you know, who cares what the speed is? You know, can you actually get a connection? Will it actually be sustainable for any kind of length of time? You know, so will it work indoors? You know, if you live under a tree, are you kind of are you stuffed? So I think people are getting a bit more savvy about, you know, things more than just pure data rates. But if rates can be as high as that, then maybe when they're not so good, they'll be a bit more acceptable. So that's can only be a good thing.
I think we are falling behind. You know, I think America are getting it this year. I think places in Europe are getting it this year. And if we are a year and a half, 2 years away, I have the fear that the next handset's coming out at the end of maybe this year, middle of next year. We won't be able to take advantage of the speed. Hence, many of the apps will probably start to, you know, expect that speed. The same way as if you launch BBC News on a PC from, you know, 10 years ago, it would probably just laugh at you. You know, it would just be impossible to even use it.
Yep.
Another area where the UK is behind, but it's starting to see some traction, is mobile money. So the mobile wallet has arrived in Britain, a Samsung phone and a joint venture between Barclaycard and Orange.
Yeah, now the interesting thing about this was they were talking about a Samsung Toca. Was it a Toca or a Toca Lite? Not a particularly not a particularly up-to-date phone, not something that's been out for, you know, a couple of years. Really quite interesting. But as you've put in the show notes there, this isn't something that we're really used to using here in the UK. I think we're a bit more cautious about putting money on our phones, whereas particularly in Africa, I mean, it is people's phone is now their bank. Yep. And you know, they're quite they don't use they don't have a lot of money to put on the phone in the first place, and therefore, you know, if you lose your phone, it's only a few pounds, but the convenience is just phenomenal. And I know folk sending money to Africa who find it now, it's so easy now to do that from an app on the phone. And kind of cut out all the massive fees that and the security problems that you have with the likes of Western Union or any of the banks and things. You know, if you try and send money internationally through the banks, each bank that it goes through take their cut, you know, and 50% goes in charges by the time it gets to the recipient. So I mean, this has been a really disruptive technology that has really taken off in Asian and, you know, particularly African countries, whereas here we're a little bit, as you say, behind the curve and not a little bit more reticent to use it. But Orange and Barclaycard, they're limiting it, aren't they? They're limiting it to £15 a time.
Yes.
So you know, you're not gonna go out and make a big purchase.
I did think if you're going to work, you know, like your daily commutes, you know, buying lunch, that kind of thing, I'm trying to think of, you know, times apart from probably buying fuel, you know, most of the time I would be fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah, you would. And you know, it's great for those little sundry items that, you know, you really can't be bothered to. And of course, not having to type in numbers and things like that, just waving the phone in front of the terminal. Yeah, I mean, it does make a huge thing. And I think it's just one of those things that's really just beginning to kick off, this NFC, the near field communications devices, which it's not a feature that's in many phones or devices at the moment, but you could just see that as that begins to get into more and more devices, that it is, you know, I can't see it not becoming the next big thing, which is and of course it's not just Barclaycard and Orange that are doing stuff. That's a nice link to our next story, isn't it?
So just before the show started, Google Wallet. There's been rumours for the last 6 months about Google doing something with Nearfield. Lots of talk about the next iPhone will have some sort of Nearfield built in as well. So Google Wallet was announced tonight. It's an app that will make your phone your wallet. So as you've just been saying, you tap, pay, save using your phone and NFC, near field communication. They've announced that they're field testing it right now. But the difference with maybe Google Wallet is they've got 15 big, you know, companies behind it. You know, so MasterCard involved, and as soon as you get one of the big MasterCard, Visa, you know, you're almost gold. You know, that's going to get a lot of support and a lot of backing.
Yep.
But the interesting thing from Google Wallet, which wasn't talked about, you know, with the mobile wallet story we had before with Orange, Google are linking it into, and you can store credit cards, you can store offers, your loyalty cards will be, you know, tied into it as well. So points can be automatically accrued, things like, you know, tokens, and you've seen how popular things like Groupon are. I guess, you know, once you start tying in Google offers alongside a Google Wallet, becomes a very strong proposition. Very, very interesting announcement. And they're talking about they want it to be an open commerce ecosystem as well. So they want an API so that they can, you know, if you want to develop against it, you can do. So Google Wallet, at the moment, in test, and it'll only be compatible at the moment with a Nexus S 4G by Google, available in Sprint. Over time, they plan to expand support.
And this is only in the States, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, there are other, I mean, yesterday, there just seems to be a whole raft of these. Yesterday, Square Inc., they announced a similar kind of proposition where they've got, you know, again, using near field communication and things. But that's in the States. The Google story here, of course, they if you look at Google Checkout, there's not been a massive take up of that. No. And we've not actually heard from eBay, PayPal, and what they're their proposition in this kind of in this sphere would be very interesting to see, because and how they're planning to respond, because that would be something else.
I mean, PayPal aren't going to let other people step into where they have built up that market. You know, they're going to defend that area vigorously. They've got a massive, I was going to say lead, but they've got a massive market share. You know, and I still don't like the service, I must admit, but it's almost like you have to grudgingly use it.
Yes, although I've become much happier with it. In more recent years. I mean, I hated it when it first started. I hated the fact that they used to charge for insurance that they would never pay up on. I hated the fact that they would never do any chargebacks. Yep. So, you know, if you paid by PayPal, trying to get a refund was practically impossible. So they have really kind of addressed those kind of things and kind of grown up, I suppose, but a little. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they respond. And, you know, as we say, you know, there can only be more things happen as more devices come out with the NFC stuff. So.
And it's a bit of a catch-22. It needs infrastructure and shops to take advantage of it. I guess shops and the big companies rolling out these services need to be convinced that there's a market out there that people will use them.
Yeah.
So it's chicken and egg. I still think it will happen.
I'm sure it will. I mean, you just need the next generation of point-of-sale terminals to have this in it. They're all gonna push that, definitely.
I'm trying to remember where it was. I want to say it was in WH Smith's, one of the WH Smith's in Glasgow, I'm sure it was in. And they had each terminal, as well as the usual chip and pin, and you could hand over cash. There was a contactless pay underneath. And I think they had to kind of back the card, you know, because they've been pushing it on TV. And I think they had that kind of idea that if you've got that, that was an option.
Yeah. And McDonald's are bringing it out in the summer as well. I mean, that's always they're always a good like to push this technology too. So it's good.
A couple of stats very quickly. YouTube has turned 6. And I thought it was around for much longer than this. I don't know why. It just feels like it's been there forever. But YouTube has turned 6. Global daily views have gone up 50% in the last 12 months. So they're handling 3 billion views per day. And if that wasn't enough to kind of blow your mind, because that is a lot of people viewing videos, it's now YouTube exceeds 40 hours of video uploaded to the site every minute.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Which... it's just, I cannot imagine how much processing power that is to upload it, encode it in the 5 or 6 different formats they encode it in, to host it all, to cope with the bandwidth that must need. It's just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
I mean, there was a story a couple of years back that something like, you know, YouTube was like 10% of all web traffic or something ridiculous. So what that is now, who knows, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. But so happy birthday, YouTube. From a nice happy story to one of complete, total, utter fail. Sony, good old Sony. They've managed to get the PSN network back online, not fully.
I think they should call it the yo-yo network, really. It's up and down like that. It's shocking.
Wah, 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 wah.
Actually, it's not even going back up again, though, is it? It's just down the time.
Not fully.
Give it Prozac or something. Give it a bit of a lift.
So since our last podcast, so they're back online. You download a new firmware. You have to change your open password that everybody now knows. So gaming, home, video rental, playback, and curiosity. Not the whatever I pronounced it before, because it now doesn't make sense. Are all back online. Store will come later. With a welcome back program for users, where they'll be able to choose 2 games out of the following list, which is Little Big Planet, Infamous, Wipeout HD or Fury, Ratchet and Clank, and Dead Nation. And old games, but
good ones.
If you've not got, you know, Wipeout, for instance, fantastic. Little Big Planet, I think everybody bought. Infamous is a good game. Ratchet and Clank's okay. Dead Nation, nah, you're not going to buy that. you also get some good games for PSP, so if you've got a PSP account. You also get 30 days free membership of PlayStation Plus, even if you're not a member. If you are a member of PlayStation Plus, you get 63 days. And Music Unlimited subscribers get 33 days. So not too bad. And also for us in the UK.
But hang on, have they been charging people for these for all the days that they've been down? So I mean 33 days. I mean it's getting on for about a month that they've been down. It's ridiculous.
You're getting 63 days, but it was down for 27 or 28. So you are getting extra days. Just
yeah, I mean it sounds like a free month, doesn't it? But actually
Yeah. And they've also announced that the UK and European countries will have an identity theft program similar to America.
Great. I mean, talk about shutting the door after the horse is bolted. Good grief.
So you will get free of charge for 12 months with Affinion International Limited, an identity theft protection service. So it covers three key areas: personal information protection, help assistance and guidance, and financial protection. I think they're probably doing as much as they could, given what's happened. However,
should it have happened in the first place?
No. And also, one day after they brought it back up, they had to pull it down again because there was a
because they forgot that the passwords that people were to reset were actually known by the hackers.
Well,
basically, your old password here and change it to a new one. Okay. Because I've got a list of a million or however many millions of the passwords, I'll just put that in then.
70 million.
70 million.
But basically, their web-based system was hacked. So they had to take it down, patch up the hack, and then bring it back on again. And they did that within 24 hours. And if you were affected, you would have had an email. So that wasn't one to really worry about. I guess what is it to worry about is since this first happened, they've had, I think, 8 or 9 breaches now that they've had to admit to, where they've lost many thousands of people's identities and passwords and secure information.
Yeah.
Now, whether it's a case of the hackers are just, it's open season in Sony, whether it's a case of they're being whiter than white and they're just going to tell everybody everything that happens, and other companies are seeing similar things and not revealing it, or they're paying off in the background, who knows? But Sony at the moment are under fire and are under pressure. Mm. They don't look like a company you could trust your data with.
No, and I wonder sometimes, I mean, like a great technology company like Sony, and you wonder, I mean, it could easily happen to the likes of Microsoft or Google as well. You've got a bunch of really, really smart, really bright people who probably think that they're smarter than the hackers. Just a little bit of arrogance like that can lead to a terrible fall, as we see with Sony. Not that I'm saying that's what happened, of course. It's possibility.
Well, it was hinted at in a couple of blog posts previously that they always assumed that the PSC was uncrackable, and that was their front facing best bit of security. They've also announced a massive $3.2 billion predicted loss, which would be one of the biggest losses ever. And that's mostly because of the earthquake and the subsequent damage to infrastructure in Japan. It's just obviously a really difficult situation. I think sales as well have been struggling. Global economy's not the best right now.
They shouldn't have had PS3s running the control room for those nuclear power plants.
Ouch. So not only have I got to hack out the one about people being dead and how dare they let the iPad lines grow, I've now got to take this one out. I don't know. Ethic violation.
I know. And we're talking about arrogance and, do you?
Red card.
It's shocking.
but interestingly, the loss doesn't include the amount of money that this hack has cost, which is upwards of $171 million already.
Massive, isn't it?
Massive. And that's not accounting for the PR cost and the loss in confidence, etc.
And I think that this is actually an interesting point, because because often computer security experts or you know consultants or the people that you've got in an organization that are responsible for that kind of thing, you know, talk about how much money it's going to cost for that, and often companies are kind of loath to kind of spend the kind of money that's required. But when you see the impact that it has on a business if you get it wrong, that actually it can easily pay for itself. But of course, you don't know if it's paying for itself if you don't have a massive incident like this, do you?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Another bit of game news. Have you ever played Minecraft?
No, I haven't. I've had a look at it, and I don't know that I downloaded it, actually.
Well, once we get the Digital Outbox Minecraft server up, which we will do at some point.
Oh, go for it.
Yeah, I think you will become addicted, because it's just like block building or block mining, and it's as you can do whatever you like in it. They did announce it was coming to mobile platforms, iOS and Android, this year. Interestingly, it will be Android first, specifically the Sony Ericsson PlayStation certified Xperia Play. I didn't just cut and paste that out of a website. So Xperia Play is the phone that is just about to be launched that has the actual, you know, physical buttons, so you slide it out and it looks like a PS, a kind of PlayStation styled, you know, buttons, etc.
Yeah, the buttons are really horrible on it though.
I thought so, and I also thought it was strange that you would, you know, something like Minecraft, which has got a, you know, a massive following, you would stick on that Android device.
Not very good, unless there
was a couple of bits of speculation around, does it let them launch small, you know, and make sure they can scale and make sure it's working fine, and it allows them to almost, you know, tweak it in isolation, you know, so get it up and running, make it good, and then hit the other platforms.
Well, I'm looking forward to it on the iPad, actually. I think that'll be great.
Oh, that would be lovely. But I considered buying a MacBook Air just so I could Minecraft in front of the telly. Yeah, exactly. You may shake your head. You may shake your head. Staying with Android. BBC News has finally hit Android. So. I reckon it's about 6-8 months since it came out in iOS.
It's been a while, isn't it?
And it's now on Android. You can share stories, you can SMS them, you can use social networks. And if you're on Android 2.2 or higher, you can watch BBC News using Flash.
Ah! Saviour of the Universe! You see, that's another film reference from 30 years ago. I don't know.
Everybody gets that one, but...
I'm just getting old. It's just...
I did point out you're 40.
You did.
You are the oldest of us. You are the elder statesman. You are the father of the house.
Enough already.
It's all good. Right, and finally, one for the fanboys. This was in The Guardian a couple of days ago, yesterday. And there was an advert for a new laptop from Dell, the Dell XPS 15. And it had the phrase, finally, the power you crave in the thinnest 15-inch PC on the planet. But there was a little asterisk next to that statement. And so you look down at the bottom, and in the small print, that was based on Dell internal analysis as at February 2011, which I think is fair enough, you know, that things might change. Based on a thickness comparison, front and rear measurements of other 15-inch laptop PCs manufactured by HP, Acer, Toshiba, Asus, Lenovo, Samsung, Sony, MSI. No comparison made with Apple or other manufacturers not listed. because there's a MacBook Pro that's slightly thinner. So
you won't believe it.
It's just class.
That's just brilliant.
So,
five-inch thick laptop is the thinnest ever. Compared to laptops manufactured in 1965, because they didn't have any.
You do realise that because you're that old, you don't need to put that kind of old man accent on anymore.
So, it comes across anyway. Oh, dear.
You know what I just realised?
What's that?
We've reached our picks. You've got an iPad pick. And right at the start of the show, I says we should have had some iPad picks, and we just chuckled away. What?
I didn't want to bring it up right at the very beginning of the podcast, but see, you just spent the last 5 minutes slagging me off. I'm glad you brought it up. Save me.
Yeah. So a nice segue is, I'll do my pick first. So So my pick is for the Mac, none of this iPad nonsense. And it's an app called Fantastical. It's on the Mac App Store and it's $8.99. And it's a very lovely calendar app that runs from your menu bar. And it's got a natural language interpreter. So if I slap in podcast with Henry, 8 o'clock on Wednesday, it will put it in on Wednesday at 8 o'clock, and it could even invite Henry along if I wanted to do that.
Right. So like Apple Mail does.
Yes. Thanks for that.
which doesn't cost $8.99 either. No, I'm sure this is a lovely app, Ian.
It looks nice. B, it means I don't need to launch Calendar because I don't really like iCal.
No.
I've got to be honest. And it's got a few options, so you can see underneath, you could change it to, depending on how many, if you're a busy person, lots of calendar entries, you can just say, well, show me the next 5 days or show me the next 2 weeks or whatever. But I just think it's a really nice, quick way of adding in calendar entries. And I like it. And it looks nice. And you can't beat an app that looks nice.
That's true.
And it does put a little nice date icon in the menu bar as well.
What more could you ask for?
I don't know. What's your pick? And we'll find out.
Well, you know you can't get Flash on the iPad.
Really?
Well, you can, kinda.
How?
Splash, I can't even say it. You have to change that as well. Splashtop.com. Splashtop.com remote. A 179 app for the iPad, which is effectively a VNC client. Nothing particularly special about that, you might say. But it does work particularly well with video, with Flash, and also with sound. So the sound from your Mac or your Windows comes through really nicely. What the other thing it does, which is really smart, is it resizes your desktop resolution to 1024 by 768. So what you see on the iPad is exactly what's on the on your screen. There's no pixel resizing or anything like that. It resizes the screen that you're remoting into, and these things do make it really one of the best VNC type RDP remote desktop applications that's there, I've just been particularly impressed with it, and at the moment it's going for $179, which is very good, because there are loads of other. There's a plethora of VNC apps out there, ranging in price from nothing right up to $20 or more, it's a really good app. And if you've got an iPad, well worth getting.
Fantastic! That was really good. I've spent a lot on VNC apps and I've had mixed success.
Yeah, well, this is one that does actually that I find works really well. They've got a funny way of trying to connect to through firewalls and things. You kind of connect to a Gmail account, and then it kind of finds you through that. So, but even just on your local Wi-Fi network to be able to connect in and watch videos and get the sound and stuff as well. Brilliant.
Very good. Thanks for that. And that's our show. And under the hour, get in. If you want to find out more about us, we are at digitaloutbox.com. And we'd love to hear your emails. info@digitaloutbox.com. And you can talk to us there. Or feel free to leave a comment on the website. We're also on Twitter at Digital Outbox and Skype as well. So if you did want to... I really wish Tam would do a review. Just on anything random. I miss Tam's one and only review. That would be good. I was going to say Chris. Henry, where can we find out more about you?
Well, you can find Chris at chrishutchison.org. No, you can find me at Talk Rhubarb on Twitter.
Fantastic. My blog's eandee.net. My Twitter is Reaper. And if you want to find out how long it's going to take for my new Mac, it's another 4 weeks. It's unbelievable. It's just just too long. Yeah, but it's like constantly. See, he's left, or he's going to leave. You could be the new countdown presenter.
I don't know. They seem to be going through them like nobody's business.
I wanted to make a good joke about the last of the numbers, but I better not. I think we'll leave it there. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh dear.
Oh, talk about lowering the tone.
Don't you talk about lowering the tone. People died to make your iPad 2, I hope you know.
No.
Hope you're watching your blooming splash top remote app tonight to watch an episode of Countdown, and you'd be like, do you know, people died to make this.
It's all right, it's only 20 of them.
Oh, I was going to say something really bad there and I stopped myself. I feel so proud.
So proud. Oh, dear.